Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
NFL Live. Gronk says he's bulking up and getting ready to go. He'll join Tom in Tampa. You'll be shocked at how many wins over Rob Ninkovich says he's adding for the Bucs. Plus an inspiring feel-good story we could all use right now. Devin Still and his daughter Leah join us as they celebrate 5 years cancer-free. And ahead of this weekend's golf match with Tom Brady and Peyton Manning, we'll revisit the best moments in their historic rivalry. Happy to have you with us on this Thursday afternoon. I'm Wendy Nix. Rob Ninkovich is here. Ryan Clark and Field Yates check in as well. But we start with that dynamic duo soon to be reunited in Tampa. Immediately after New England Patriots, former Patriots tight end Rob Gronkowski retired, there were rumors he'd be back. And now the three-time Super Bowl champ has reunited with Tom in Tampa and is focused on packing on the pounds.
Yeah, baby. You know it. I was about, my lowest I got to was 240. And it felt good, you know. I've been above 260 pounds basically my whole entire life since high school. Since senior year in high school, at the end of senior year, I was 260. I'd never been under 260 since then. So it felt good just to drop that weight, you know, ease up my joints, let my body, you know, free. I kind of felt like that weight was bloated weight too, instead of, you know, just running and trying to catch a frisbee. I got to get out there with them and go and run some routes, go run those football routes. You know, but I can't believe that they're out there running without me, that Tom's out there throwing to all the other guys. What the heck, Tom? You can't even wait for me? What the heck? This is ridiculous. I'm going to have to catch up.
Well, listen, he might have to catch up on the weight, but the energy level is just fine, per the norm with Gronkowski. Ninko, you played with him in New England, obviously. Now, he was talking about dropping some 20-odd pounds during his brief retirement. How much does putting that weight back on really matter?
Look, I don't think it matters at all. If he's 240 pounds, 250, 260, he's not going to be doing the same things that he had did prior with the New England Patriots. In Tampa, they're going to split him out. He's going to move a lot. He's not going to play 90% of the snaps. He's not going to be the road grader. He's not going to be out there run blocking like he had in the past as well. So I don't think it really matters. I think that for him, it's going to be coming in lighter. He says he's going to be 260. I don't think he really wants to be 260. They're going to kind of have him on a pitch count, not playing last year, losing a bunch of weight, coming back. You don't want to gain too much weight too quickly. Sometimes when you do that, that's when you can have an injury. So for him, I really don't think it matters. If he's 245, 250, he's big, he's got great hands, that's all they really want. They just want him to go up and catch the ball.
Yeah, listen, Gronk's a dog. And when you're a dog, you play at any weight. You know, I played with Troy Polamalu, and I watched him play at 190 pounds, and I saw him play at as much as 245. It's about where your body feels good. And for Rob Gronkowski, I think the only time that the weight would actually play a factor would be in-line blocking, and that's about want to. Have we ever watched Rob Gronkowski play football and say, this dude doesn't want to roll grade somebody, or this dude doesn't want to put the guy he's blocking underneath the camera on the sideline? And so I don't think you have to worry about that. It's going to be about his health. It's going to be about making sure he's ready to go down the stretch run of the season, because that's when they'll need Rob Gronkowski the most.
Yeah, Wendy, I'm not super concerned about Rob's body weight. I think the only weight that matters here, by the way, shout out to Rob Gronkowski, the WWE 24/7 champion, the longest reign in that title's history. But where I do think there is some weight is behind the $9 million that Rob Gronkowski is owed this year, which that may not be wide receiver money, but it's more than Travis Kelce. It's more than Zach Ertz will make this year. So while I think that the Bucs did not pay a substantial price in terms of draft compensation, that $9 million they owe to Rob Gronkowski, to me, suggests they're expecting some substantial things out of him, not just as a blocker, not just as a red zone weapon, but as a difference-making tight end that can help put them over the top.
Well, to that end, Ninko, I'll circle back to you. How many wins do you think does having Gronk add for this Bucs team?
Look, number one, they got to beat the Saints twice. So there's two games right there. That's the team in the division that we know is going to cause them the most trouble is the New Orleans Saints. They're a great football team. And for Tampa to be able to beat that team, they need Gronk. So there's two games right there. Then they're going to play Kansas City. There's another. That's three. That's going to be a big test. Then you go Packers and Vikings. So I'm going to say five games. When you have Gronk on your roster, you want him for the big games, the games that really, really matter in the red zone when you need a big target to spread the defense out. You need Rob Gronkowski. So I'm going five games. That's what they're going to add to their winning column with Rob Gronkowski on their roster.
All right, Gronk. All right, Rob. I love you. And you're both Rob, so it's confusing me right now. Rob Gronkowski, Rob Ninkovich. But five wins, I felt generous with saying one additional win for Rob Gronkowski with the Buccaneers. Now, listen, I think they're going to be better than they were last year, stating the obvious 101 right there. But I figure Tom Brady himself probably accounts for a couple of additional wins. So I think one extra win but that is driven by Rob Gronkowski could put the Bucs into about where I expect them this year, which is somewhere between like 10 and 12 wins. The Saints are loaded. To me, they're still the team to beat in the NFC South. So while I do think that Gronk was a clear talent add for them and makes them better, I think more than one additional win feels like a lot to ask out of a guy that 2 years ago, when he last played, was battling every single week to just try to be sort of what he had once been on a week-by-week basis. I'm expecting big things from Gronk, but I think one win is a reasonable addition for the Bucs this year.
You know, for me, it's not even about the win total during the regular season. I think this team will be about as good as they were going to be from a record standpoint in the regular season before they got Gronk. So maybe it is one win, as Field says. But what I think will matter is how he affects this team in the playoff, how he affects this team in situational football moments that matter down the stretch. I think the NFC South will be won by the New Orleans Saints, but that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers could be the hardest out from that division. And a large part of that is Rob Gronkowski. Are you going to double team Rob Gronkowski and leave Mike Evans alone or Godwin? Who are you going to cover in the red zone when these big plays need to be made? And if we think back to the last time that we saw Gronk, what was it? It was a great seam catch against the Los Angeles Rams when the New England Patriots really couldn't move the ball or score all game. And I think that's where he will affect this team. That's where he will help Tom Brady. It's going to be down the stretch after he's been on the pitch count, after you've saved him throughout the whole season so you can have him ready for the moments that matter. And that's when we'll see that $9 million you talked about, Field, pay off.
That's a fair point, Ryan. And perhaps when New England missed him the most as well, it became glaringly obvious there towards the end. Meanwhile, let's talk about Aldon Smith for just a minute. He's a Cowboys defensive end, and he was conditionally reinstated by the league yesterday. He had been suspended since 2015 for violation of the NFL's personal conduct and substance abuse policies, and he discussed his return during an interview with TMZ Sports.
I am extremely grateful for the Cowboys, Mike, Jerry, Steven, just everybody who's been involved and instrumental in the process. Just to where I am now, and I'm really looking forward to the future. My goal is to pick up where I left off, and God has blessed me with talent, and one of the talents is my natural gift to play ball, to be an athlete, so I still feel young. I don't have the mileage on my body. I still feel great. When I go to the gym, I still feel young and fresh. So if anything, I'm looking forward to what I'm going to be able to do out there.
Field, what does the conditional part of the reinstatement mean for Smith?
Yeah, it doesn't mean that he is entirely out of the woods as of yet here, Wendy. He can begin taking part in the Cowboys' virtual off-season program, and you would think of all players, he will be motivated to be a part of that, to get acclimated with some of the verbiage and just be back around football after 5 years away from the game, but he must remain on the straight and narrow. And a reminder that just because he has made all the tremendous strides that he has, Wendy, he still is dancing a very fine line. He must be a model citizen going forward, or else an NFL career that, frankly, I thought was already over would unquestionably be over for Alvin Smith.
I mean, 2015, Rob, isn't yesterday. How much of an impact, realistically, can Smith make for the Cowboys?
Look, the last time I checked, offensively, the NFL is passing, and the more pass rushers you have on defense, the better your team is going to be. So if they load up on pass rushers, it's not a bad thing. So I don't think he's lost the ability to get to the quarterback. Look, he's 30 years old. Granted, he hasn't played in a long time. I understand that. He's going to be in shape because we all know that he's a freak athlete. He had been able to get to the quarterback plenty of times. If he can get things back on track off the field, I hope he can do that because he's a talent. He's been able to get to the quarterback all the time. 20 sacks. I mean, 17 sacks. The ability to get to the quarterback in the NFL right now is vital. So if the Cowboys add another pass rusher to their group on defense, it's only going to help them. So I can't see it hurt the team. And I'm happy that he has another chance at this because everybody thought that his career was over. Nobody really thought that he was going to get back on the field. So I'm happy that he is reinstated. He's in a position to go back and be productive. So hopefully he stays on track and he's able to get an opportunity to do that.
I mean, yeah, obviously you're excited for Alden Smith. You think, you know, I do believe he deserved another opportunity. But now you look at the team, if you're the Dallas Cowboys, it all depends on what you expect from him. Are we depending on Alden Smith, or do we see whatever he does as lagniappe, as we say in Louisiana, as extra? I think if you go into each week saying Alden Smith has to be here, he has to be accountable, we need these snaps from him, I think that may be, or that may get you in a little bit of trouble. But if you say everything that he gives us is a plus, if he can be a pass rusher that can rival what Robert Quinn was for this team last year, then you have hit a home run with the decision to bring him on as a member of your team. But if there is any fallback, if there is anything away from the field, you can't be a team that is tied to Alden Smith that is dependent upon his production. You have to understand what type of person you're dealing with, what type of player you're dealing with, and hope that he stays clean and brings you some of that elite level pass rushing that we've seen from him in the past.
And that certainly every team can use. Well, you can't talk about the Cowboys without talking about Dak Prescott's contract situation and field. It seems like there's not a lot going on. I'm not sure it matters. We have some time, but I'll let you weigh in. Does it matter?
Yeah, Wendy, here's what I would say is that in continuing to try to report on this, I'm reminded perpetually, July 15th, that's the date that we need to fixate on, because everything up until that point, you know, it could happen tomorrow, but it also could be, you know, on the eve of July 15th that a long-term deal is done if one is reached. I don't get the sense there is much anxiety over this deal other than the fact that they've been negotiating now since he became extension eligible last year. Just the facts are here. Dak Prescott has an incredible amount of leverage. He's not going to settle for any deal. Meanwhile, the Cowboys have the leverage in that, you know, if they don't get a long-term deal done, then Dak has to play one more year and expose himself and his body to the potential of major injury. And he would not have a new deal until next offseason. So July 15th, I hate to be simple and boring, but really that's the date that matters most. These next couple of months might be quiet with football news, but it doesn't mean that we need to expect the Dak Prescott deal to be rushed into being completed.
Well, Nico, let me ask you this, because I think Jerry Jones and Steven have alluded just a little bit to the balance of dollars here and almost inferred that Dak should take less to give the Cowboys some financial flexibility. Do you believe he should do that?
Well, look, if you want to be the number one quarterback, the highest paid quarterback in the NFL, you're $33 million a year, around that range. So if you're a team and you have some questions, and look, the Cowboys, they've done their diligence. They understand. They've seen more on Dak than anyone else has. They've seen every single throw in practice. They've seen every single rep in the weight room. They understand him. And they know where they want to be at, and they don't want to be like a team that we've seen give too much to a quarterback and then they're stuck. So I think if you're Dak and you want to be the number one guy, you want to be the highest paid guy, and the Cowboys aren't willing to go there, then you have to be willing to say, okay, fine, I'm going to play under this contract this season. I'm going to go out and I'm going to perform. I'm going to make them pay me the highest contract in this position just on performance. Because if the Cowboys come in and they're under, say they're offering 25, 26, I mean, I don't know, and Dak's turning that down and wanting more, then it's in his hands to say, okay, well, then if they're not going to pay me, I'm going to have to show them that they need to pay me accordingly. So if both sides are willing to do that and the Cowboys don't want to pay top dollar and Dak doesn't want to settle, then it looks like he's going to have to play the season out.
Ryan? Nope. Nobody? All right. I thought somebody else was weighing in there. Nope.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know.
Yeah, no.
I'm back.
You got anything?
You need me?
No, we're good. All right, we move on.
No, I just think.
Go ahead, Ryan.
No, I was just saying, I didn't know I was up. I just think when you look at this Dak Prescott situation, both teams and both sides have dug their heels in and said that they are not going to move off of what they feel they are worth or what Dak Prescott is worth. And so for me, I am worried about this. And I understand that Dak Prescott has to play under the franchise tag if nothing is reached, if there's no long-term deal reached. But if you're the Cowboys and you think you are on the cusp of winning a Super Bowl, you don't want a quarterback that is not settled. You don't want a quarterback that doesn't feel love, and you want a quarterback that knows that this is his team and will be for the foreseeable future.
Show him some love, Ryan Clark. Preach it. I like it. And again, like Ninko said, though, or Field, the deadline to sign that franchise tag player to a long-term deal, July 15th. If it doesn't happen, you have to wait until the season is over to negotiate a longer situation. So,
Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you, like your mom when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday, Social Security, is that a thing? Hey, mom, what is my Social Security number? Mom. Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
Geico, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
Well, tonight is Throwback Thursday. We'll have an all-time great, the college football championship game. It was Alabama at 1, Clemson at 2 from 2017. 7 Eastern on ESPN and the ESPN app. Speaking of which, former Alabama quarterback Tua Tagovailoa, drafted 5th overall by the Dolphins, now joins a quarterback room that includes former first-round pick Josh Rosen and journeyman Ryan Fitzpatrick. Fitzpatrick spoke earlier today about his expectations for the rookie QB.
I mean, I think just like everybody else, it was expected that if there was a guy that they liked in one of those selections, that they were going to pick somebody. And, Tua happened to be the guy in that spot. I help them. I'm an open book and try to make sure that they know and they're comfortable with coming to me with questions. I'm as competitive as they come, so I want to go out there and start. I know there's a lot of forces that go into it. You know me very well, I think, from last year, and you know I want to be out there competing on Sundays.
All right, you guys can't see it, so we'll talk about his look another time, but I'm outright scared right now. But anyway, Ryan, how do you see the Dolphins quarterback situation playing out?
Well, I think one thing, you go 2 years ago in Tampa Bay, Ryan Fitzpatrick blessed us with his chest hair when he stole some of Deshaun Jackson stuff, and now he's blessing us with his quarantine hair. And I think that's what happens with Fitzmagic. He's the gift that just keeps on giving. But when you look at what he's saying, he's saying, listen, I want to help these guys be great, but I believe that he starts this season as the starter for the Miami Dolphins. You look at the end of last season, he would not allow that team to take his competitive fire, the way that he went out every day and fought. It made the people around him better. And if I'm Brian Flores, I say to myself, I don't have to rush Tua Tagovailoa to be the starting quarterback of this team this year because of Ryan Fitzpatrick. And so for me, I think you weigh the options heavily. You let these guys compete, but it comes out as Ryan Fitzpatrick as the starter day one for the Miami Dolphins.
Yeah, Ryan, I agree.
You know something, Wendy? Ryan.
Well, did I cut you off, Field? I'm coming in first, Field. I can't.
Go ahead, Nick. Land the plane.
I'm coming. So, look, my hair looked just like that yesterday, by the way. Just want to let you know.
Oh, I'm sure.
Cut late last night. Anyway, so what I'm saying, I agree with Ryan. You don't need to throw your rookie quarterback out there too soon. You have Fitzpatrick. You have a guy that's a veteran. Look, I can remember when I was young and I was with veterans and asking questions, and you want to return that favor when you're a vet. You want to help the younger guys out. It is a competition. You're trying to make a team. You're trying to start. You're trying to be the best at your position. We all want to do that. But at the same time, when you're in the same room with somebody, you form a bond, you have a friendship, you're trying to help out as much as you can when you're a veteran. So when you have a rookie quarterback, anybody, a rookie D lineman, rookie linebacker, you're trying to give them as much knowledge as you can because you want to see them succeed. So look, I think week one, you're going to have Fitzpatrick as your starting quarterback. There's no need to rush into pushing a rookie starting quarterback.
All right, so first of all, I'm going to throw the false start penalty on myself for trying to jump in front of Nink with that incredible analysis, by the way. Now, I'm going to go back to what I was going to say, which was that Fitz is the perfect backup to have in this situation. And here are the reasons why I feel that way. Ryan Fitzpatrick is good enough that if Tua struggles or is not ready at the end of whatever training camp or preseason we have, Ryan Fitzpatrick is good enough that you can justify having him out there on the field and the locker room will respect it and respect him. But Ryan Fitzpatrick is not good enough or has not been consistently good enough, and you do not have too much invested in him, that if he starts to struggle, it's going to create an unfortunate and uncomfortable tension between him and the locker room and Brian Flores, the head coach, and Chan Gailey, the offensive coordinator, when Tua's time comes. There is no gray area here. Everybody gets what it is. Fitz is the bridge to Tua. Mm-hmm. And as Fitz said in those earlier comments, as he also said when he was on Eric Wood, his former teammate's podcast called What's Next, is that he is here to be a mentor for Tua, whether that's him being in front of Tua on the depth chart or behind Tua on the depth chart. The competitor in him wants to play, but he gets it. I think it is the perfect person to have in front of Tua right now in Miami.
It certainly does seem like an ideal situation in a lot of different ways, especially as they wait for the young quarterback to get completely healthy. All right, gentlemen, thank you, no matter who went first. John, it's been quite a journey for former Bengals defensive lineman Devin Still and his daughter Leah. After she was diagnosed with cancer in 2014, she appeared at a Bengals game and stole the hearts of millions. And there they are, the stars of the show, Leah and Devin. Leah, I know you got to watch that. What's it like? What do you think when you watch how this all unfolded?
I'm just like really happy because I'm just really happy because I get the chance to be alive and just be a kid.
Yeah, you are being a kid. And tell me about that, because we haven't been going to school like normally. You've been doing everything a little bit differently. What's been keeping you busy? Yes, having a lot of fun with Dad, I'm sure. What have you been doing?
TikTok, Roblox, just a lot of stuff.
If I could tell you how much TikTok and Roblox are in my house, you know, Dad, it literally doesn't stop. Leah, have you thought about what you want to be when you grow up? Did anything come to mind during this?
I want to be president, and I also want to be a doctor.
Listen, fair enough. You have my vote for both. So call me when you're ready. Devin, let me ask you this. I know that through all that, you learned some valuable lessons, and you've been using that to talk to some folks during this difficult time. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah. So like you said, I learned a lot of lessons from Leah battling cancer. And what I did was I took those lessons and the lessons I learned from playing football as far as leadership and resiliency, and I started something called Playmaker University. And since the pandemic has happened, I've been working with a lot of sports organizations and companies across the globe, just teaching their employees or their players how to be more resilient during these difficult times.
Devin, what's the best piece of advice you could offer for those out there? And we know there are plenty who are struggling right now.
Is you have to do whatever you can to not lose hope. There was a lot of times when Leah was battling cancer where the doctors told us she only had a 50% chance of surviving. There were times where we found out that the cancer had spread all over Leah's body, but we never lost hope no matter the bad news that we got. And we believe that having hope for the future gives you power in the presence to take action to reach those goals that you have.
Leah, let me ask you this. I know there's been a lot of people, and we've talked a lot about doctors and hospitals during this time for obvious reasons. Could you relate to all that, given what you've been through? It was a different disease, but nevertheless, you've been there.
Yeah, a lot, because it's just like being in the hospital, and I really wasn't allowed to go anywhere. So it's just like I'm in
where I was before. What you did before. Yeah.
All right, but guess what? I know you're in Houston. That means school gets out this week. Summer is coming on Friday. Tell me your summer plans. What's on tap?
I really don't know.
What I tell you your dad needs to do for you?
The
pool.
Yeah.
I need to go ahead and build the pool in the back.
I think that's right. Leah, now's your time. He can't say no on national television, so you should ask him right now.
I think it's breaking up.
You know what? I think you are. I can't hear it. Communication's a little dicey. Listen, guys, congratulations. We hope you'll be back with us soon. And Devin, thanks for the great work you're doing. We'll continue to watch. Thanks, guys.
All right. Thanks for having us.
Well, the NFL and the AFC West in particular chasing the Chiefs. It's a tough task, though. Last season, KC went a perfect 6-0 against division rivals, and they enter next season with just about every starter from that Super Bowl winning team. One difference, their backup quarterback in 2020, it will be Chad Henne instead of Matt Moore. They also added to their offense in this draft, selecting LSU running back Clyde Edwards-Helaire with the final pick in the first round. Field Yates, an offseason grade, if you will, for the Kansas City Chiefs.
Wendy, I'm going to go with a B+. It didn't do a whole lot, but you just referenced all the pieces they're bringing back. 10 of 11 Super Bowl starters on offense, 5 of their top 6 rushers from last year, 8 of their top 9 receivers. This grade goes from a B+ to an A+ if they get a long-term extension done with Patrick Mahomes, which many of us expect will happen at some point before the beginning of the NFL regular season.
All right, as I mentioned, the entirety of this division chasing the Chiefs. Let's look at the Raiders. They did make some big moves. Once again in free agency, adding Marcus Mariota, Jason Witten, and Corey Littleton. And while they lost a number of defensive players in free agency, Las Vegas drafted 3 skilled position players in the first 3 rounds of the draft, perhaps as a counter, of course, to having Patrick Mahomes in the same division. A grade for the Raiders, Ryan.
You know what? I'm going to say the Raiders got a B+, and many people may think this is high, but when you look at what they were able to do with Corey Littleton, and you add veteran depth in the secondary with Randall and Heath, and you listen, I didn't think that Ruggs was the number one overall wide receiver, but he had the speed they wanted, and Damon Arnette, the first round cornerback from Ohio State, and Amik Robertson, the fourth round pick from Louisiana Tech. I think both of those guys have opportunities to be stars as a starting corner and nickel. You also have a backup quarterback in Marcus Mariota that can push Derek Carr for the starting position at the quarterback spot. And so for me, I think they did a great job of building a team that John Gruden wanted, that Mike Mayock wanted. And so moving forward, the Raiders have improved. Now we'll see what they look like in Las Vegas in their new digs.
Absolutely agree. Can't wait to watch. Now to a Drew Locke-led Broncos team. He added some key veterans, Melvin Gordon, Jarrell Casey, and A.J. Boye, who will replace former longtime Broncos corner Chris Harris Jr. And just like the Raiders, they went with receivers in this draft. Alabama's Jerry Jeudy in the first, and then Penn State's K.J. Hamler in round 2. Ninko, what do you got for the Broncos in the offseason?
Look, you don't want to come in my classroom. I'm a tough grader. So I'm going with a B on this. Some people might think that that's a little bit low for all the talent that they did bring in. But look, their head coach, Vic Fangio, he's a defensive coordinator. He's a defensive guy. So you could see the top 3 people that they did bring in, they're all defensive people. So you think of Casey, a 5-time Pro Bowler, impact player on the inside, great pass rush, will help Von Miller on the outside, because we all know pressure in this league, that's how you win. You got to get to the quarterback. So you bring in Casey, you have Shelby Harris, you bring him back on a 1-year deal, had 6 sacks last year, could be on a tear trying to prove that he can do it again. And then you got AJ Boye, the cornerback, so he's going to be your number one corner. They went defense, they want to be able to stop that Kansas City offense. I mean, they're pretty tough, so that's why they loaded up on defense. So I'm going with a B. That's my grade.
Okay, I think that's all right. Not terrible. All right, now to the Chargers, who finished last in the division with a 5-11 record. L.A. brought in former Green Bay tackle Brian Bulaga, as well as Linval Joseph and Chris Harris Jr. on the defensive side. And then they will look different, of course, without Phillip Rivers and Melvin Gordon, but are looking to the future with former Oregon quarterback Justin Herbert. Field, a grade for the Chargers.
Well, Wendy, first of all those that ditch Rob's classroom are welcome right here in Casa de Professor Yates, because I'll hand out an A- to the Los Angeles Chargers here. I love some of the things they did defensively. Chris Harris on a two-year contract, very versatile slot, but also perimeter corner. Linval Joseph, a big body in the middle of that defense, try to fortify that run defense. And in the first round, they land their heir apparent to Phillip Rivers in Justin Herbert, and also trade back into the first round to get Kenneth Murray, a plug-and-play inside linebacker out of Oklahoma, who I expect to be a candidate for Rookie of the Year on defense. I wish they had done a little bit more work at the left tackle spot on their offensive line, but trading away Russell Okung for Trey Turner was one of the best moves of the offseason. A-minus for me.
A-minus. All right, fair enough. The Chiefs, again, won the division each of the past four seasons. They are the heir apparent and, of course, the defending Super Bowl champs as well.
Realizing my potential has been what my career has been all about. Things that I've dreamed about have actually come true.
And the Patriots have won Super Bowl 36. Unbelievable.
Things have happened in my life as I kind of hoped they would happen. It's been, just a complete evolution. You know, how I just kept kind of fighting and clawing to continue to power forward. You just keep putting one foot in front of the other, and you keep trying to make progress. So when I look at over 20 years, I look how far I've come. But there's not one step that I took where I realized, look how far I've come. But those series of steps that I put together, I go, wow, that's quite a journey.
Wow, fascinating. And there it is, Man in the Arena, Tom Brady. It debuts on ESPN in 2021. It's a 9-episode series providing Brady's perspective of this unreal journey. Field, what do you think when you see that, and what do you look forward to?
You know, Wendy, Tom Brady mentioned realizing potential at the beginning of that teaser there. And I look forward to the moment when Tom Brady realizes that his potential is to be the greatest of all time. I think he has always believed he could be great. But at some point, I wonder if he realized that if he stayed on his arc, he could be the greatest and most accomplished quarterback of all time, which I believe he is with his 6 Super Bowl wins. I want to see that moment and see when that switch was flipped.
Field, look, I played with Tom for a long time, and I know him as the man. I know him as the guy that not a lot of people know him as. They just see him as the football player, Tom Brady, the football player. So I know there's a lot of people out there that really don't know him a lot, and other fans of other teams that really don't care. They have their opinions of Tom. He's a great man. He's a great competitor. And I can't wait for this to come out, and everyone can see basically the behind-the-scenes Tom Brady.
No doubt. It will be fascinating, again, coming in 2021. Meanwhile, Wes Welker, an interesting spot for Welker right now, a teammate of both Peyton Manning and Tom Brady, of course, as we look ahead to their matchup on the golf course this weekend. He spoke with our Mike Reese on what to expect.
Hey, but golfer is Peyton.
Peyton is going to be steady Eddie. Tom's a good golfer. When he works at it, he's a pretty good golfer. Now, when he's not working on it, I mean, he sucks, you know? So, like,
who would be the first of the two to throw a club on the course?
Tom, 100%. 100%. If he starts hitting bad shots and it gets bad, like, that's, you know, they're going to throw or broke it.
I throw with the best of them every time, guys. Working on it. See you soon. Have a good afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow for NFL Live.